water drain you right in my yard.
Still quarter hour.
Okay, are we ready to go?
I think we are. Verizon time is 6:59.
Wow.
So we can probably...
So I say that's close enough.
Yeah.
All right, I'll call the meeting to order. Can we have a roll call, please?
President Kelly.
Here.
Vice President Helenius.
Here.
Director Sanfilippo.
Here.
And Director Deweese.
Here.
And Director Najarian is out of...
The country.
He'll be back next week.
Okay. Now, members of the public wishing to comment on something not on tonight's agenda? Don't see anything. We got recognition and reading of resolution number 2016-12 for appreciation of former director John Janowitz. Aha!
I do.
Yeah.
So, Mr. President, as you'll recall, the board adopted this item at our December meeting. But to the extent you would like to do pomp and circumstance with Mr. Janowitz, we're happy that he's here and able to accept the resolution.
Okay. John Janowitz. Thank you for your service to the Avila Beach Community Service District. Whereas John Janowitz has served on the ABCSD since 2009, whereas John Janowitz provides service to the board in the capacity of vice president, whereas John Janowitz was highly effective in providing consistent vision, structure, and public accountability to the district during his 7 years, whereas John Janowitz served the district on the Facilities Committee, whereas John Janowitz served the district in the capacity of implementation of the Rate Assistance Program, whereas John Janowitz was instrumental in providing direction to the board by serving on the Personnel Committee during both employee and general manager transitions, whereas John Janowitz served the district in the capacity of initiating the implementation of the district policies and procedures for billing customers, whereas John Janowitz has earned the respect and admiration of his peers and colleagues and the community for his dedication and service to the community of Avila Beach. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Board of Directors of the Avila Beach Community Service District, San Luis Obispo County, California, as follows. That the Avila Beach Community Service District does hereby recognize and commend John Janowitz for his years of dedication, leadership, and commitment as a board director for the Avila Beach Community Service District, and adopts the resolution as a public statement of their recognition. Signed by all of us. John, thanks.
Thank you.
Now, do we give this to John?
That's his copy.
John, that's your copy.
Thank you.
Suitable for framing, but if you'd like it framed, we'll be happy to frame it, but we thought maybe we'd just wait and see what you thought about that.
Speech.
It was a lot of fun. I never expected it. Chuck Ellison corralled me into doing this all those years ago. You know, he said, just come on in, you can serve for a couple of years. What was it, seven?
Seven long years later.
And I didn't think I was going to make it past the last round. I was going to stick around long enough to do the rate change. And then here I am.
There you are. Well, we appreciate that.
Tuesdays when I know the meeting's going, I'm missing it. But I'm also really busy with everybody in the household. So.
Right.
Kai, my son, said, are you cooking dinner? I said, no, I got to eat. Just left. His mom's at the gym still. She'll be there for a while. So, anyway, if you make the meeting short tonight, I'll stick around and listen. If it drags on, I'm going to go. But thank you.
Thank you.
You're very welcome, John.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Okay, fire department. He's got a grin on his face since we've had 10 inches of rain since he spoke last time.
That's right.
Is it 10?
So,
32 calls for service here in the Apple Valley. On the coast itself, we're seeing about a 20% increase in call volume. Attributed a lot to that, to the economy doing a lot better. With that said, a couple things we're seeing, especially with the first kind of rains, we've seen a marked increase in structure fires throughout the county. That's because of people's roofs. They haven't been really maintained over the last 5 or 6 years because of no rain. Leaks in the roof, they find power, we start burning homes down real quick. So, with that, a lot of flood waters here in the area. San Luis Creek has been pumping out a lot of cubic feet per minute. Some stats to take home with you. About 4 inches of moving water can knock you off your feet. 18 inches of moving water will move your car. So, with that, we caught 2 kids the other day trying to catch boogie boards in the San Luis Creek. If you see any children even thinking about getting into that creek, tell us to stop, call us, we'll come out there, educate them, we'll educate my mom and dad. But any boogie board or kayak in this creek is going to end up in something horrible happening. So, if you see it, call us. A couple of road closures around here. We remind people not to go around the signs. It may not be real apparent. We've had some issues throughout the county, not here specifically in Apple, but where the county closes the road because the culverts underneath have been eroded. People drive over the top and think everything's fine, and the next thing you know, they punch through the asphalt. So, some different things for us. The governor approved 5 additional fire engines to remain staffed here from the summer. They're now going to be staffed through the winter. We've been using them for projects like Ontario Ridge and Davis Peak, so we're happy to have them here. They've been helping us out a lot with the flood fighting, so we appreciate that. Christmas trees, we're reminding everybody, if it's still in the house, evict it. Kick it out, it's time. They are past dry and dead. So the only other thing we have going on, and if you can kind of help me out with this, is we're recruiting right now at our Apple station, 8-call firefighters. So if you know anybody that's interested in giving back to their community, we'll send them to a very short modified fire academy. But if you know of anybody, twist their arm, have them come over to the fire station within the next couple weeks, and we'd love to get them signed up or explain more about what the program is. So if you know of anybody, fill them into it, please.
All right.
That's all I have for you tonight.
Okay, thank you. John?
How many inches of water would you have?
18.
Okay, that means I'm a 16-year-old.
Yes,
please do.
Well, there was the recent one on the TV at Rio Grande, right?
We had one here on San Luis Bay Drive. Went around the sign, hit that standing water at about 30, 40 miles an hour, and two of them closed up. So then the drunk driver followed in behind him, and made it even better.
You've been making a lot of cameos on KSBY, I must say. Your agent's been very busy.
I like to stop doing that.
The horse ran by me on the freeway yesterday. I couldn't believe it. I had to lock up my brakes going fast, and we start going slow, and the horse runs right by me. But fortunately, they caught the horse, and the horse survived. But it was an amazing thing to see in the fast lane of the freeway. Right. All right, it looks like we have a sheriff in the house that we haven't seen in a while.
Yes, thanks for warming up.
Right, warming up. Fashion relates to
Bill Clinton. Thank you. I appreciate it. I have a hard job. So for the last 30 days, we received 55 calls for service in Alba. That I talked about last night at the AVAC meeting. That's down from 87 calls, which we received basically a year ago in December. So make of it what you will. We had 6 traffic stops by deputies on vehicles in town. There were 2 911 calls that required response. We didn't have any issues developing from either of those. There were 2 pedestrian contacts where the deputies stopped somebody on foot. They did 5 foot patrols in the Pirates Cove area. We had 10 alarm calls, 4 residential and 6 business. The business alarms were actually at the same business, and it was due to a faulty wiring system. We didn't have any losses associated with the alarms. There were 2 disturbing the peace calls. They both involved loud and intoxicated subjects at the hotels. The hotel guests were disturbing other guests. We didn't have any vandalisms reported. We didn't have any thefts reported. We had 3 burglaries. 2 of them were at Bob Jones Trail parking lot on the 15th of December. The items stolen included purses and credit cards. We've got surveillance cameras at that lot and a few other places in the coast area where we have been having the theft problems. The surveillance cameras haven't captured any footage. They didn't get license plates. And what the deputies have been doing, when the thefts reported, they download the video and they literally watch from the time that guy's car pulls in the victim's to the time the victim leaves. Nobody came or went. What we think is going on is that they're walking in, probably from the highway side into the parking lot. We put deputies out on foot. They scouted the area 200 yards in either direction. We didn't find any homeless encampments in that area. We're surmised that they're probably riding the bicycle in, probably coming down out of San Luis, and they walk in and steal something. We think that the suspects are probably homeless because we've got two other groups in the coast area that are doing car burglaries. And they are stealing wallets and credit cards, and then they go and use the credit cards. So we've been able to get license plates of vehicles at other locations, Turi Road, Toro Creek, and Reservoir Canyon, using our cameras. And then when they use the credit card, we go get the store surveillance, and we're getting the suspect's pictures. None of the credit cards that have been stolen out of Bob Jones have been used anywhere. It kind of indicates that the people that are stealing them are not the type that are going to go to Target, you know, with their basket and use the credit card. So we're going to relocate the cameras and see if we can get the access on the little footpaths coming up from the highway. We haven't had any arrests for this reporting period. It's been fairly quiet all month long, so it's a good thing.
Yeah.
And that's it.
All right. Any questions for the sheriff? All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay. Reports on conferences, meetings, general communication.
I've got just a couple that you know about, but as reminders, there's ethics training at the Templeton Community Services District office that's available to board members on January 19th. Today or tomorrow is the last day to sign up. They want a headcount from us by tomorrow. And a reminder that all board members need to do ethics training this year in some fashion. Could be this, could be a webinar, online kind of a
thing. So we got a year to do the webinar?
Yeah, we should do it sometime.
Okay.
Can we do it in our home, or do we have to come to the office?
No, I think we can get you a password and a login so you can do it at home. I have one, and I don't see any reason why.
Is the price the same?
It's free.
It's free.
So, yes.
But we have to pay for the...
The Templeton one is, I think, $50.
It's what, 9 to noon?
Yes. I think, Eric, are you still planning on going?
Yes.
Okay. So we'll get you any details you need on that if you need some more details on it. I was thinking about going, but I have a state water contractor's quarterly meeting that same day, so I'll go to that instead and probably do the online one myself. So that's an action for me, is to get some login information for y'all. The blah, 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 board members. Oh, a board member best practices. I think I forwarded an email on that. This is another CSDA sponsored training that's alive. Going to have a speaker come and talk. It's going to be down at the San Ynez Community Services District. It is funded by SDRMA, our insurance carrier. That's also free. That's from 9 to 12 on January 26th. And this is going to be, could be appropriate for new board members, maybe existing board members, or board members that have been at it for a little while, but just kind of a discussion on the roles of board members at community services districts. CSDA is really making a push to, instead of doing everything in Sacramento or LA or San Francisco, to try to get out a little bit more. And so the closest one for us would be San Ynez. So if you're interested in that, let me know, let us know, and we can get you signed up again. No cost except for the drive to San Ynez. And then finally, the CSDA annual meeting is going to be in this room on Friday, January 27th. If you can give us an RSVP by the end of the week as to whether you're planning on coming. As you know, we were talking with Director Sanfilippo this afternoon. The district is kind of hosting it, meaning that Christy's doing a lot of work, and Brad's helping when she barks at him to go do something. He does it. But we do spend a considerable amount of staff time just helping coordinate it. There are other CSDs. The board treasurer, or the CSD board treasurer, is out of Templeton Heritage Ranch. Oh, no, right, Heritage Ranch CSD. And then also the Lori Ion from Templeton Community Service District also helps. But it takes quite a few people to put this thing together. It's a dinner. You elect officers for the following year, for this year, for the local chapter of the CSDA. And it's a, I think you, several folks have attended. I don't know if, John, if you attended that one or not. But it's fun. It's probably a stretch, but it's informative. There'll be speakers, supervisor.
Lynn Compton. Lynn
Compton, thank you. I was in South County. I got to get my
Paul. David Church.
Church will be here. CSDA representative, local rep, Palmer will be here. I think we had four speakers or so, and a dinner. So.
Well, I'm planning to go, and my wife will go for port.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think it's... The district can definitely pay, to, in my way of thinking, subject to board approval, but my way of thinking, the district can pay the $20 for the dinner as a training slash whatever we want to call it out of that.
The menu looked good.
We got a little different setup.
Right.
Again, that was, Christy was kind of trying to get a little different thing going. So
right.
Okay, that's all I have on reports and conferences.
Okay.
You let us know if you'd like to attend, because I think they're going to be, you know.
A lot of supervisors coming in here.
Sure.
We have Debbie Arnold instead of Lynn Compton.
Oh, is that what it says?
I'm assuming. Previously, Lynn Compton.
Yeah, Compton came last year, didn't she? It's Debbie Arnold.
Yes. I'll get her back. We have Debbie Arnold this year. While we're just talking about this for a minute, Christy puts in exceptional amount of time to put all this together. So I asked, because it's been customary, I guess, to have to always put this on. And I don't know where we are right now, but there's almost a couple of days of work in the first part. And that's on us, I guess. But, you know, I'm not sure that we should always order all this kind of time and resources without a rotational thing. Tradition, I guess, but my concern is that we have one person, one employee, and for 2 days they're tied up putting all this on them.
Shouldn't we get some sort of reimbursement? It would seem to me it would be the polite thing to do, other than, you know, kind of like, I know they love coming here. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I mean, the argument is we're sort of centrally located between, you know, south and north, but that's still.
And the venue's free, except for the.
Well, maybe they should be giving Christy a gift certificate or something. We might have to give a little hint.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes people need to be pushed.
That's all I'm saying.
I agree with you. When I saw it again, this
I'm saying, why should Christy take all this responsibility? Or you give us a stipend of $150, we hire a couple of part-time people to set up a chair and all of that. Why should our employee, who has other responsibilities.
You've done it.
I did.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's, like I
well,
said,
it might be too late this year, but I just think...
Yeah. They'll be back next year. Yeah. I mean, this is the third year.
Yeah, so we'll make the point to the new president, whether that's Marshall or whoever else.
That's
the appropriate time, you know, play, basically say, hey, let's rotate this around.
But I don't know what the other feelings are on.
I think we ought to have someone help her set up.
We could
definitely
raffle tickets. Yeah, make money.
This year,
CSD said sell raffle tickets to hire someone to help,
or to make someone to reimburse Chris.
I think we could get it out of the CSD
local chapter. And if we have. How many people do you need to help you set up?
Well, ideally four, because you have to throw every table and chair that's in this room. You know, if we have four people to set up. And what usually happens is they all come at 5:30, which is way. I mean, we start at
like, right, so
at 2.
Can you line up four people between now and then?
people make the point of maybe dragging in somebody else from some of the other CSDs to say, hey, send your staff here at 3 and get a couple hours out of them.
Because if we could get 4 people to help you, whether it's from a high school or whatever, I think this year, for this year, and then we just pay them, and then we could ask to be reimbursed or next year have it as part of the budget.
And the high school, like Arroyo Grande High School, I can just call and they announce it and they have to do community service hours, so they will, but it might be a little early in the school day. Yeah. Like if it's after school, they can do that, or if it's a Saturday, usually they can do that stuff. But
I'll check
them out.
Does the fee to go, that what is it, $20 per person and then $25 per guest, does that all go to the CSDA? Do they make any money off of it?
Not off the
dinner. So it's to pay for food, basically.
Yeah. But where they make the money is on the auction items. Remember, we do that auction. Everybody brings a little.
A silent auction. You sign up.
And we sell the drinks. And that's where we make up the difference.
Well, I think if you could, so it, this is on a Friday night?
Yeah.
And it starts at what time?
5:30.
I think it starts at 5:30, but what happens is we set up all the tables and chairs, put all the linens down, and then everybody starts to bring their auction items. So then we set up all that. I mean, it's kind of involved in the beginning. And then once it starts, it's not bad. And then we just clean up. But you remember.
I do.
You've done it.
I've done
well, I think you should call the high school or whatever, see if you can get the help.
Yeah.
Maybe set up a lot of it the night before. I don't know.
Yeah, we might be able to do that. If nobody's in there
that
night, we could probably do
that. Because that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Okay, well.
Okay. We'll see what we can do.
Does anybody have any questions? I guess we're moving to the consent agenda. Does anybody have any questions on that? I didn't have any. I was wondering, though, you know this WSC Water Systems Consulting, the Avila Regional Recycled Water Study? Where does that, did that go under consent item?
That is in the Capital Improvement Project.
Oh, okay.
Report.
Okay, good.
And I maybe, did I...
I don't know. I got confused.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know where it went.
I think I attached that. I should have made it clear.
Okay.
But yeah, we can cover that at the CIP. The financials, I'm just looking over the consent items. We talked about the CalPERS discount rate. One thing I did want to say, if I may, Mr. President, is the kind of what's happening with Lopez. I got the latest info at Lake Lopez. Here's Pete, if you want to take one, pass it around. It's 2 pages, and let me see what's going on at Lopez. You're a state water guy. So one side is current storage, and the other side is reservoir elevation from January 4th through January 10th. The county now has a real-time water and rain gauges set up out there. So you can log into this and see what's going on. You can see I printed this or I pulled this down just tonight. And as of 6:30 or 6 o'clock, the current storage was 12,511.2 acre feet. And the water elevation at Lopez was 462.2 feet. And the takeaway is, you can see on the one graph what's kind of going on from the Wednesday rain. We got a big jump, and then I assume we'll get a little more. Well, I guess this is a Sunday night, January 8th and 9th rain. But Lopez is coming up. It's come up almost 5 feet, and about 2,000 acre feet. I think the lowest point was about 10,400 acre feet. So things are saturated now, so any amount of rain that we get, we'll see some significant runoff. Recall the capacity of the lake is right around 50,000 acre feet when it's full, so we're far from having a full teacup. But it sure is nice to see a, and this is not saying the drought's over and let's have a party, but it certainly is nice to see it going in the other direction. And then state water, our state water reservoirs up in Northern California are also, a lot of those are actually, you probably read about some of the flooding and some of the other stuff on the Russian River that going on up there. So again, just a different trend from what we've experienced. I think still in Southern California, they're still quite low, but we're getting good. So this is just kind of the results of the rain.
I have a question. So what does this mean with the last meeting we had a notice from Lopez about the chlorates?
Chlorates,
yeah. Is this going to affect the that?
No.
No?
No. This is the chlorate thing was really, I think, just kind of a one-off. They've resampled, haven't had any issues with it. The water quality, well, will improve as we get more water in the lake. The pH will drop. They were having some significant issues with scaling because the pH was rising, and all of that is kind of looking better. The county was ready to spend a significant amount of money to put in a pH adjustment system. That's $600,000. I don't know if you recall, we talked about that two or three meetings ago. And at this point, they're going to hold off a little bit and see if that's going to be necessary.
I have a question about our contract with Lopez. I got to thinking about those chlorates after our last meeting and how they had sent that notice out and that, you know, you felt we should announce it publicly just to be...
Public. Right.
On our contract with Lopez, doesn't it say that we should be... we buy their water and they guarantee that it's going to be good, clean drinking water? Are we just having to absorb these uh-ohs? You know, whoops, it doesn't quite measure up. We're doing what we can. I'm just wondering how our contract reads, if we are have something to fall back on if, God forbid, this kept happening.
Mm-hmm. I don't know the answer specifically to that. I'm sure it says they'll deliver potable water, and they work hard to do that. In terms of their treatment process, their treatment system, but I you know,
okay. I was just curious.
Yeah, I don't know what the what the guarantees are, or even if there's liabilities if they don't. Do they have to pay for, I don't know, take a Flint, Michigan for an extreme, if they were delivering water that was of outside of the drinking water standards, will they then come in and pay for bottled water or something? I don't know what the answer is. That's a good question.
Okay. Any more comments on the consent items? Hearing none, I'll make a motion that we accept the consent items. Do I have a second? I guess we're supposed to at all times.
Yeah, okay. President Kelly?
Yes.
Director Sanfilippo?
Yes.
Vice President Valenius?
Yes.
And Director Deweese?
Yes.
It passes 4-0.
Okay, moving on to the business items. Item A, ad hoc drought committee to become permanent committee for ABCSD.
President, members of the board, this item just was a follow-up from the December meeting. At legal counsel suggested that an ad hoc committee is technically supposed to be a limited term, or I think he even said 1-year committee. We've had the drought committee for a few years now, so we thought appropriate, or Mike thought it appropriate, to make it a standing committee. And so staff recommendation is to make it a standing committee, make the drought committee a standing committee. Not clear if we need a motion to do that, but that's probably the easiest way.
Okay. You notice as soon as we decide to make this a standing committee, it started raining real hard. That's Murphy's Law, is that what it is? Okay. I make a motion that we change the ad hoc drought committee to the Standing Drought Committee.
Second.
We got a motion and a second. We need a roll call.
President Kelly.
Yes.
Director Sanfilippo.
Yes.
Vice President Hellenius.
Yes.
Director Deweese.
Yes.
All righty. Drainage and parking issues in Avila Beach area.
Yes, sir. Do we think we have any of those issues here?
Yeah.
Drainage in...
My goodness.
Drainage in the winter and parking in the summer.
Oh.
Sometimes they're together.
Oh,
right. Drainage.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So I kind of gave a fairly lengthy staff report and included as an attachment the staff report from the September 13, 2016 meeting where we were talking about parking for the drainage issue. Maybe we'll break them apart. We probably spent, and Locke was at that meeting as well on December 20th, we spent the bulk of our time talking about drainage. Probably because the county was running the pumps in the parking lot at the time, or they had been doing it. Kind of to the crux of the matter was that it's the county is interested in taking a look at potential solutions to the drainage issue. There's been a lot of discussion about it. They've spent the county public works, the roads folks have spent around $60,000 last year, and they anticipate that may spend that much again this year on, you know, staffing and manning up to run the pumps. Now with the heavy rains that we've had and the flows in San Luis Obispo Creek, we've lowered the level of the sand, and so now it appears to me to be draining by gravity. This last Sunday storm, I don't think they pumped at all. Did you? Pay attention. So everything got washed out, so now it's draining by gravity. So hopefully we won't need to pump anymore this year. But the summer will come and the sand will backfill and it'll be back right where we were, I think, as a regular thing.
Is that the drain that's over by the park that they sent in that backhoe to clean out?
That's where they pumped the water to.
That's where we pumped it.
That's where they pump the water to.
So then it goes out. It's kind of formed.
Yeah, it goes into the ocean.
Okay.
But that's not the gravity drain now.
No, the gravity drain is the duck bill that's in the river by where they park the outrigger.
That thing that flap.
Yeah.
And what feeds that is if you go to the end of Colony Drive and First Street, I guess, there's a grate and an inlet there. And that's what feeds the duckbill, which then goes out.
That's the drain for that.
And you
so this, where it used, well, it didn't flood on Sunday, but it did last week. So that drains then to the drain by the playground, or the pirate park.
When they pump it.
Oh.
And that's what the $60,000 is for those pumps. But you know, it was curious that the creek had been meandering back to its old course. And someone told me that they're hoping when it blasts out, it'll blast out kind of where they dug the trench. And it did.
It did, yeah.
Yeah, it blasted out right there. And so it didn't meander back.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can see at the low tide all the sand that's been pushed out there, which has made a wonderful surf break for those that want to dare put their face in that water. Yeah, so that's good that blasted out.
Yeah, so we're probably good for the rest of this wet year, but I think a solution is still at least more permanent solution. And the county had funded a conceptual design report in 2015, which recommended, they looked at several conceptual alternatives, and they came to the Cannon Engineering did the work that a permanent pumping system would be the most effective and best solution for it at a cost of around their cost estimate $375,000. So it kind of comes to okay, who's gonna pay for it and who's gonna maintain it? The county at our meeting on December 20th, the county committed to working on scaring up some grant funds or some other dollars to help fund the capital project cost. And then the room got silent in terms of who's going to operate it then. The county didn't want to be responsible for operation and maintenance. And so they all looked at the CSD. No, they didn't really look at the CSD. But
so you volunteered?
I volunteered.
No. Oh, you did.
I volunteered to take it to the CSD board for discussion and or the facilities committee to look at. So there was no commitments made. The O&M part of it was estimated, does that number sound right, $25,000? Is that your recollection? That included a sinking fund?
That was a year, every year.
$25,000 per year.
For operation and maintenance.
Yeah, and it would be probably on the order of $5,000 to $10,000 for operation, and then the rest of it goes into a sinking fund for equipment replacement, because you have to replace things periodically every, 5 or 10 years. It was a very, sort of conceptual discussion, and there was no commitment made by any of the agencies on anything. We just sort of tried to lay out some sort of a path forward that says, let's at least explore this. The catch would be, so who's going to pay for the O&M? And we would have to form, or the county would form, an assessment district of the people that benefit from the pumping system. Now, is that the whole town of Avila or just this side that drains this way? Everybody on the other side of San Luis Street would not be, because their drainage goes out to the beach on this side. That we sort of discussed that, but didn't come to any finality on that. But that would be the idea. And then you'd have a special assessment if you lived on the side of the
So that would be on your tax bill.
Yes.
Okay, now, the port owns the parking lot.
And they would be a big piece of the assessment district, which they...
Yeah, because that's... And that is the largest group in the county, is people in the harbor district.
Well, and the biggest... area.
It's the biggest area and the most population. So therefore, that assessment would be very fair. Now, because the Harbor District's already assessed by those very same people. So that means that all 80,000 people or something would be paying a portion of that. We could just make the colony of Avila pay for it.
When you say the colony of Avila, who's
that's the development along that strip.
We warn them every time.
Yeah, every time they come.
We tell them.
Right, but then, as far as us operating it, I don't know about that.
Yep, no, I didn't either. But I just would.
I think the port should operate it, because they'd be the number one beneficiary. In other words, isn't that the biggest problem with the drainage, is that it covers the parking lot?
Well, I think our piece of the puzzle or the discussion was that the water that comes into the parking lot middle side of Avila goes through that drainage ditch, and even though it's our parking lot, the water is coming off the surrounding properties into that area. So that's why we would be a part, and I think we would actually have the largest assessment.
You would.
Because they're going to assess based on the size of your property.
Based on your square footage.
So we are going to be contributing probably the largest amount of funds for that, but we still think that there's a component that does really relate to the hardware in terms of the drainage.
So all this coming off this hill here is basically what fills that up.
Right.
And that, being that it's below mean high tide, doesn't help things, but that's basically it coming down from that hill.
Right.
And down, just when we were out Wednesday night having some fun popping manholes, not this Wednesday, but maybe it wasn't.
Yeah, it was a week ago tomorrow.
A week ago tomorrow. It was, you're out there in the rain sort of looking at it, and there was a significant amount of water coming down First Street and San Miguel. When you make that break at San Luis Street, so all of those.
So it's coming down First Street.
Coming down First and hits the same
yeah.
grant system.
Coming down San Miguel from the beach to First Street?
No, coming this way down San Miguel.
Huh.
Well, then I guess a little bit too, coming back from the beach.
Okay, so this way on San Miguel, then it would be coming off the hill. But doesn't it, like, it runs through by Sylvia's house and everything, or because she's always complaining about that?
Yep, all that comes this way.
She put in a pump. Yeah. So
I mean, that's just sort of the conceptual idea that when you have a zone of benefit, you have to figure out what the costs are, and then how are you going to equally distribute those costs to whoever is benefiting from it. And so that's something the county is more experienced at than certainly we would be. And there may be some work that would, there would be some work that would need to be done to make that pass muster to actually do an assessment. And again, the county would probably work that side of it.
Is drainage part of our job?
No.
No.
I mean, I thought, and especially a road, a county road. Isn't it a county
The road? County does storm drains.
Yeah.
But the thing is, they'll assess you for it, but they won't maintain the storm drains. So the storm drains all around my neighborhood are all run by the county, and they don't even check them, and they're always... It's always backing up. And the whole Laurel Street comes down and runs through our property.
How can they not maintain them? That doesn't seem... Isn't that their job? I mean,
They don't maintain them. They don't pay for them. They just assess you. For instance, we had to pay $30,000 for our storm drain in the future, if we develop, to go from my property through people's self-help housing property down to that culvert down there.
Then okay. What are we getting for our tax dollars? We should tell the county they have to maintain them.
Yeah, well, good luck.
Well, we have to think about this. We definitely have to. Our supervisor's coming here. One of them, we can talk to.
They can really incentivize right now just because, like Brad mentioned, they're spending $60,000 a year to pump the stream that floods over here at the corner. So... It seemed like they're more motivated than they have been.
Yeah, and they've now sort of set that precedent for them to stop doing that.
And they've admitted that they do it. I mean, here's the proof, 60,000.
Well, yeah, or there's the proof they're out there.
So they should just keep doing it. We say, well, that's so nice, thank you so much. You know, you can use our restroom if you want. I mean, it's their job. They try to push it off on us.
They don't go around maintaining throughout the county.
I think it was more of a practical discussion to say if we want this, a way to make this work. And again, I wasn't, the group was just sort of having a collaborative sort of staff level discussion. And I said, we have staff, FRM is running around here that can do maintenance on pump stations.
Who gives us the money to do that?
The people that are assessed.
Oh, okay.
The tax bills, and then that money would come to the district.
We could have FR.
Well, is it our job? And to me, the concern would be who's going to carry the liability if a pump breaks and somebody floods, and now they want to sue someone.
Which brings up.
That's the big dog.
If we want to do parking, LAFCO says we can do that. But let's see if we decide to run that pump station. I bet they won't even ask LAFCO. It'll just be, oh, good, you will run it. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
In other words, you got to get permission from LAFCO to do something. But if it's something that'll save the county immediately money, then...
Yeah, that question I haven't asked, but you make a good point.
Which leads to that. Did you guys read what they said about LAFCO and the parking? In short, the district would be required to adopt a resolution of application and file the application with LAFCO. The district files indicate at least some of the... Okay. Well, so in other words, we could file with LAFCO and do a parking thing.
Yes.
But the parking lot belongs to the port and the county roads belong to the county. So I don't know... Who's
we
left,
don't want it.
Who's left in charge?
60 last year, and they're going to spend 50 this year. So they're just fishing. They'd like to get rid of this, I bet.
Oh, yeah. See, I was talking about the parking.
Or do you think
but you're talking about the drainage.
Oh, yeah, I think this drainage.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we probably should, you know, compartmentalize our discussion, but as far as staying on the drainage issue, but, you know, you say they're trying to get rid of it. Yes, I think, but they're also looking at, and again, maybe I'm just too dang practical, about solving the problem of every time it rains, it floods down here. You know, it affects, I guess you could say, our constituents. So to what extent do we want to try and help, or do we just more forcefully say, hey, county, that's your job? And that's probably been the argument for years. Locke's been at this a little longer than I have, as far as getting the county to do something.
Yeah, that for sure is the county's job, because the county was the one that gave the parking lot to Port, and it flooded before they ever gave it to Port.
Yeah.
I forgot to bring my picture from 1880 where it flooded. So you see the Narrow Gauge Railroad, and right along it is the flood. I'll bring it next time.
But didn't the county try to tell us, this is before I was here, but didn't the county try to tell the CSD that they were responsible for cleaning out that drainage?
No. Or they tried to tell us that? I don't
know.
Didn't they do that for a while and said, no, it's your responsibility, and then here's the parking lot, here's the drainage, and here's us. And I think the county ended up being responsible. Am I wrong? Or do I remember?
I don't think they ever, they might have suggested that, but we would have said no way. All along.
There have been some emails and communications over the course of time about whose responsibility it is
for that drain.
To clean out the drainage area, and we've always said it's theirs. And they've said, you know, on paper that it's ours, but that came up as part of the discussion, and I just said that the drainage that goes through that ditch is from the county property. It just happens to be on the port, in the port's parking lot. So we've always felt it's your responsibility. And we have something from Ryan Hofstetter from many years ago when Carolyn Moffat was on our board and said that they are responsible for that drainage ditch. And now they've backtracked a little bit from that. But I've kept that email. I think it was from 1999.
Good, keep it.
Yeah.
Pull it out for so long.
So I guess the direction for me would be if you want to say, if the board says, no, we're not interested in operation and maintenance of it, but we're going to get together again in probably 4 to 6 weeks. People are going to kind of go back and staff it a little bit, talk with their boards, and if the preference is, we don't think it's part of the CSD's responsibility, we're not interested in it, I think that's perfectly fine. And that wouldn't be contrary to the discussion I had. My commitment to the group was, I'll bring it to the board for discussion.
Okay, so what is our receive report and provide direction to staff? So, Ken, you're not for it at all.
I'm not for it.
Okay. Eric? Lynn? I'm not necessarily for it either.
Okay.
That would be getting their foot in our door, and then
it's a concern. And again, the bigger picture for me is the liability stuff. If something goes wrong, and now Martin Resorts is looking for somebody to sue.
Those are all $2 million homes here. Plenty of tax dollars coming in out to support the kind of cost that's needed, as far as I'm concerned. Because you only have 339 ratepayers to bring in. To support that, for the other 20,000 to come in town, I just say share the cost. But
yeah.
County people.
Yeah. Well, that's the message we're going to give them.
That's clear.
I'm sure the port can't afford it. You got to work on the pier.
What do you guys think?
I don't trust the county.
Good. I'm glad we
had formed for 30 years.
Right.
Sheriff's
Department deal with. Yeah. There's only one thing worse than the county. The city of San Luis Obispo.
Everybody was holding their breath. Yeah.
And I guess just to wrap and pick up the parking issue again, I kind of broke these up. We spent considerably less time on the parking issue because we were kind of running out of time. And kind of the takeaway points on that was as we talked about in September, the district could go to LAFCO and look at getting parking powers. I'm not using quite the best verbiage there. But at this point, I certainly don't recommend we go that direction. What I kind of took away was the 2013 parking study did have a set of recommendations that were sort of laid out there. I think the board took some action, and then we had a little change in, since that time, change in general managers there. And my recollection from our meeting, again, Locke, correct me if I'm wrong, was that Andrea was going to talk about, did your board want to move forward with just having meters in the port parking area over by the harbor proper? Is that kind of...
At the base of the Hartford Pier.
Hartford Pier, yeah. And do you use that as a first step to sort of see if there was interest, and then that would then perhaps look further into, in terms of being cost-effective for the CSD, in my opinion, CSD, to try and buy meters and install meters on some of the county properties here and start a program of meter reads and enforcement that was outside of what the port already is doing would be cost prohibitive. I don't think the payback would never work its pencil its way out. So I guess I'll continue to attend these meetings and sort of keep the board informed on what's going on with parking. But I think it's going to be a baby step to see how that works out. And then the idea of, we've got the public opinion too of, and business of, putting meters in on Front Street and First Street, probably not that popular with the businesses.
What about, did you have to go to LAFCO to get special parking permission to do parking, or is it, you didn't have to do
that? No, the harbor is a little bit different than the CSD. We can encompass more responsibilities, but we would have to go to the Coastal Commission for our parking.
Good point.
So for the port?
For the harbor.
What about here in Avalon? What would you, Coastal Commission or LAFCO?
For the parking lot?
What we no, or, I'm talking about parking meters on the street.
Anything outside of the parking lot is the county's property, so we would be involved in any part of that process. If the town of Avalon decides to put meters, or I guess if the county decides to put meters on the streets, then they have to. And then you're talking about the power of being able to be responsible for the parking, then you have to go back over that.
So if the county came in and put in meters, then all the money would go to county. Wouldn't go to port.
That's right. I think there was some discussion at some point that because our harbor patrol officers are here and they enforce parking in the parking lot, that maybe those powers could be expanded into the county. And then there would have to be some sort of communication with the county in terms of working outside of our district. There would have to be some sort of agreement. And it seemed like it was getting complicated. And we might not want to do that anyhow.
So it's the county that's kind of pushing for this, rather than court.
The county actually called this meeting that Brad attended, and they wanted to reopen the discussion. And it was really three parts of the parking. One was in the town of Avalon proper, Avalon Beach Drive, and then at the Harbor District. And that's what that parking plan from 2013 looked at. Street parking, Avalon Beach Drive parking, and court parking. And we feel, I think, in the Harbor District, that it's going to be easier to deal with in three separate pieces than it is to try to take it all in as one part.
I remember when they brought that 2013 study, that big, it was kind of big brochure.
Yeah.
And I always thought it was port that was pushing that. I didn't know it was the
county.
Well,
we actually received the grant funding to do a study, and we just thought at the time, if we could do that more, a holistic approach of all three areas, that it might benefit everybody be able to use those grant funds, so we did pursue that as part of the group, but we never really were pursuing it. And I think that was a perception at one point, because the port was wanting to put meters in because we wanted more money, but that was not really a part of the equation.
Good, I'm glad to explain.
And not laughed, but who funded that?
Slocog.
Slocog actually funded that, and the port was the Slocaw couldn't do it themselves. They needed an agent, I think, to push the money through. And then probably Steve, the former general manager there, might have been pushing it, and maybe the previous board as well.
So now that we know the county is thinking about parking meters, then they're definitely maintaining this. this pump. Yeah. That they were
well, and they look at it from a parking standpoint, and as the sheriff knows, on a Friday afternoon, or if a concert's going on, and that was the other thing we talked briefly about was when they have a concert over at the golf course, they try to get, I think, people to park on the golf course area, but they're strung all the way to Cave Landing sometimes.
Lock.
One of the things that they mentioned at the parking meeting that we were at was they can't really co-mingle the funds. So if they put parking meters in, then those funds go to street improvements or enforcement. So there's got to be a direct connection to parking that they don't take those funds and use it towards pumping.
So it doesn't go in the general fund. And,
right.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's an enterprise type fund where you have to use it from whence it came from. So, I mean, they sent a pretty robust contingent of folks. But
Ken?
You know, when the parking study was done, even though it wasn't done many years ago, I think we were in a little different time and place. Well, you have a couple of things happening now. You have the traffic and circulation study being done regarding congestion and parking. We have all these lots. We have more multi-family lots in Alba than residential lots. So the density was going to be higher. And look at this development. Well, doors down. They have limited parking. So parking will be out in the streets. So basically, I see, and that's probably done in phases, but it's probably time to look at a parking plan because of the density we have in town and the congestion and so on. To regulate some of where the parking's going to happen. And how we go about that will probably evolve over time. If we don't do nothing, then you're going to have serious issues. All the developments around 2nd Street are huge homes with limited parking. And you can park your little golf cart in your parking spaces if they're the same regular parking spots. I see just overflow right around your house, too, Pete, an overflow parking on our streets that the citizens are going to be concerned with. And I just see a time when someone's going to have to step up. How we go about it, well, it's going to be a discussion. And right now the bike path is being highway patrol and working with the county. Public Works is making our bike paths a little bit more designated because on an event day, Avila Road is full in parking in the bike lanes. And CHP has not been able to take it because it wasn't designated or, signage wasn't appropriate. So we're going to have issues in a small town in and out with all the developments and build out that we see. So to say we can't do anything, we're going to be very foolish. And I think your idea of starting in stages is a way to go. So we need to sit at the table and start having the discussions because Every time you tear down a, that's this gentleman right here when you go next to him. And you know there's no parking there. You know that.
I don't know how they're going to pull through your garage is already.
Yes. So it's all out in the street. Sand and Gill Street right now is supposedly by next October will be kind of revamped here a little bit, so there will be some parking out here. Because right now we have people claiming county property.
The Cone people.
The Cone people. Which, you know, I see they're saying their driveways are the whole length of their property. No. And the county's coming through because I'm sure that everybody comes. We have Public Works comes every month, reports out about the parking issues and all these kind of things. And one of the things they're going to do over here, they're working with each individual homeowner. Where's your driveway? Because the rest isn't going to be your driveway. Because right now, they're illegally asking people not to park there where people should be able to park there. Definitely with your development down here, you can park your house down the hill street. So if we don't have some controls in our parking by having meters, then I'm just saying we're very foolish. How to go about it is going to take some time and discussions at the table. Because the town is changing with the developments that are in place. If Chevron builds out, Harbor Terrace, and everybody else, hello, you know, where are we going to park?
John?
I know it doesn't seem feasible. This is premium parking. People pay a lot of money to park here. And they'll pay a lot of money by the hour to park here. And maybe the money can be used. Can we use that money for operational costs?
Operation of the meters in the parking system.
Okay, what else can that money be used for? If there is a net gain.
If there's a net gain, well, what we heard from the county was that has to be fairly narrowly used for parking. I would think you could look at some road improvements, but we don't want to do road improvements as a CSD. That's a county responsibility. So how
about capital? Can we use it for capital improvements?
Not on water and wastewater.
Personnel.
There was something.
Probably do something for management, personnel. Yeah.
More parking enforcement.
Maybe we could do a joint venture with Port.
Well, you got to remember here, Port has this parking lot and their parking lot in Port. The county owns the roads. So, I don't know where we would put meters.
Are we allowed to put them on the county roads?
If they granted permission.
Okay. Right.
If they do.
Yeah.
But it would just go towards maintaining the parking.
I thought that we would be able to use it for operational costs, paying for our staff, things like that.
You could pay for part of the staff because
whatever the enforcement
we pay for is less money. But, you know, it ends up being
well, we'd have to hire someone to
a meter maid.
Well, yeah,
a meter maid.
That's just cost of doing business.
Right, right.
Any money.
And now CalPERS with their rate adjustment.
Anyway, I appreciate the county and sitting down at the table.
And we agreed to get together again. I mean, I think there's a certain amount of momentum going, and we'll keep doing that until we, you know, hit a dead end or.
Which is that a closed meeting? There's no representatives from AVAC, or concerned citizens, and those other groups.
There wasn't at the first meeting, no.
We didn't know about it.
It was, County Public Works kind of called it, scheduled it, okay. And as the three agencies that probably had the most skin in the game, CSD.
No community import.
No, because it was really just conceptual, things that people were going to take and bring back. So,
if you do an application for something like this parking district with LAFCO and is that expensive? Do they require a big fee to process
it? It would be $3,000 to $5,000 to process it. So not huge, but not cheap either. I was in talking with Dave Church, executive director. He's got that kind of laid out, the process. Okay, so I've got, I think, direction and when we get together again, and then I'll report back as we have another meeting. Thank you for that.
Okay, our last item is capital project status report.
And this is our kind of our regular format. I hope you're kind of getting used to seeing the format, trying to make it so that it you can at least zero in on things that say updated versus no changes. I'll highlight the updated ones, and then if you have some specific questions, we can cover those. The water tank power install, we do have power now up at the tank, and we are running the SCADA system off of that power. We basically have an extension cord now. We're going to put some conduit in and make it hardwired, but we were so concerned with, instead of staying on the solar, the project scope didn't include power to the SCADA. It just included power to the tank with a, we call it a convenience connection. And so the next phase will be to run a little bit of conduit, pull some wire. That'll be pretty straightforward. And then sort of the bigger next step is to order the mixing system. Kind of talked about this last time, or maybe two meetings ago, so that we could circulate the water in the tank and improve our chances of staying in compliance with our disinfection byproduct trihalomethanes. Hasn't been a huge issue. It's more of an issue in the summer than in the winter because it's warmer, and that's what makes the system push towards nitrates, and then we have to superchlorinate, and then you make the trihalomethane. So I think all in all, that that project is working out well. The recycled water study was the next one I was going to talk about. We have retained Water Systems Consulting in coordination with the San Miguelito Mutual Water. We had a December 20th, actually, I went from the port meeting to the meeting over at WSC in San Luis Obispo. It was a meeting day, and we talked about a broad range of options, and the consultant was really looking for how do I narrow these down to maybe 3 to 5 so that we spend our time wisely and not spend a lot of time analyzing options that or alternatives that aren't really feasible. So we went through a process of trying to narrow those down. With Rick Kuhn was there from San Miguelito Mutual, myself, and the two staff people that are working on the project. And I think now they've got the guidance they need to analyze really the alternatives. And in a nutshell, it's it's going to be doing upgrading our treatment plant to a tertiary level. What would that cost? And what are the potential water users for that? Some sort of a combined system with San Miguelito Mutual, whether it's upgrading their treatment plant to take both of our flows, and we put in a pump station to push the water up there, treat it to tertiary, and bring it back. Sort of an offshoot of that would be, and I don't know if we have the space at our treatment plant to take San Miguelito Mutual's water and treat it to a tertiary level. And then the users are getting the water back out instead of going in the ocean. The obvious user is the golf course. And so some discussion will be there, but we'll also look at what's the cost associated with piping some recycled water back out the valley for the orchards, or upsetting some potable uses now with landscaping that's going on. The orchard and the Avila Valley Barn are fairly significant users, but it's pretty limited, and we knew that going in. Really, the biggest water user is the golf course, and then the question really is, are we offsetting potable water uses that we can then trade or enhance our water portfolio by providing recycled water? And that's kind of the concept. So we'll hang some numbers on that, and sort of what needs to happen in order to do that. It will be, I think, what the study will sort of look at in a nutshell.
I have a question on the valves. How many valves are we looking at, and how old are they?
Oh, that's a, on a different project.
Oh, yeah.
On the water.
Were we talking about that first, or are we going?
No, I skipped down to the recycled water, but I was kind of done.
I have a question about.
Yeah. Well, so on the water valves, how many is probably? I think there are. Yeah, I won't even venture. I guess I want to say around 75 valves in the system. We know the ones on Front Street are relatively new because they were replaced as part of the big dig in 2000-2001. So we're looking at maybe on the order of 25 to 30 valves to replace over the next...
To be able to turn them on and open and close.
Open and close and make sure that they actually seal. That's been our problem, is they're not fully sealing. And so we think it's closed and we try to do some work on a line and we still have water, you know, bypassing the valve and coming out makes it difficult to work on them.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. And the first project, or one of the higher priority ones, is the is our emergency bypass that we talked about probably a year and a half ago.
Over by the golf course road?
Oh, by the, yeah, going into the San Luis Bay Estates there, that emergency bypass line that's in pretty bad shape.
And the top of it is falling in.
We did put a new cover on.
The cover.
Yeah, we did get a new cover on there. But
so how long do these valves last, and what's the life expectancy?
Oh, probably 20 to 25 years. They could probably last longer than that if you have a dedicated valve exercising program where you get out there at least annually and screw them all the way down and back them back out again. So that the problem with them not sealing, typically it's a gate valve that sits down into a slot, and if you get dirt and grit in there, then it won't fully seat. But if you exercise them, it'll hit and you back off and it moves some of the dirt out of the way. I mean, it's literally. And so that is one of the more chronic problems. Sometimes the stem itself just seizes up.
Are the valves better built today than they were 25 years?
Yes, yeah. The technology has changed quite a bit. Yeah.
Because I believe we'll continue to have the silt and dirt problem
yep.
no matter what.
Yep.
But do we have better valves that are kind of just can deal with that?
More, you've got a Teflon surfaces inside now, where before they didn't. The stem systems, they're still gate valves though, so it's not a huge change, but just the functionality and the technology has improved some.
So there's a gate valve replacements and then the cost along with that. That's what this dollar amount's talking about. When you replace the gate valves, when you're talking about a tremendous amount of labor too.
Yeah. I mean you need to, if it's in the street, you've got to dig up the street, expose the lines. Typically by the time you've done that, if you have a system where there are three valves, if you notice when you walk the streets you'll see typically two or three valves at an intersection. And if those valves are all the same age, you're going to be money ahead to just replace them all at the same time.
Because so what you're referring to here is the budget is $75,000.
Correct.
For how many? Because you said the number 25 was confusing.
Well, so if you look at our, which I didn't include here, if you looked at our five-year CIP, we've got $75,000 a year for the next 3 or 4 years.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And so it's just a practical matter of doing, you know, 5 to 10 a year.
Gotcha.
And as we work our way around town, attack those ones that we know are bad, and then as we get better valves upstream, the game you play is to try to isolate the town, and you start at the top and then start to isolate different areas within the town.
So, is it right that I'm asking questions?
Yeah, go ahead.
How do we manage then the repairs that we do, how is that managed internally so we know where we are in 3 or 4 years? I mean, how do you know the age of a valve? Is that recorded somewhere? And
I wish it was.
I mean, do we have any kind of system that says, at this station we did this kind of work, you know? I kind of do this with my rentals, you know, like I forget which rooms I painted or whatever.
Yeah.
I got to document things down. Just 3 years down the road, I can't remember. So,
me neither.
You know, maybe 6 months. I
can't remember yesterday.
I'm just thinking the kind of money we're spending on, I guess we consider this a capital improvement.
Correct.
Where's our management system on maintaining our maintenance So we went to this particular station and we pulled up on the computer system. Wow, it's been replaced 9 years ago. Blah, blah, blah. I don't know.
So our
institutional history.
Okay. We've been trying to get
that. Well, yeah, but
you're right, Pete, but we don't have that right now.
I know, but every time we replace a valve now,
we're documenting it in our water and sewer atlas so that we're...
Well, that's the question I'm asking.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's a great question.
And that's a really good question because you have to have institutional history.
Yeah.
And, well, there must be something in there, huh? Does Wallace have anything for all his years?
It really wasn't kept up. I have the atlases now. I have the atlases here instead of at Wallace's office in terms of the GIS, geographical information system that has lines and also fields in it that you put in. When was this valve installed? What's the serial number?
That's what,
the date is. All those fields, unfortunately, are not filled in. Okay. They're there. So as we do these projects...
We paid good money along the way.
Yeah, we paid good money and then they never filled in
We didn't get the details in there. I mean, there are a few of them that are there. I won't say it's totally blank, but...
That might be a kind of an auditor.
That might be a lawsuit.
Yeah.
How about the valve exercising program? Is that documented? Must be.
FRM now does it annually. So that gets done, and they're good about it. I need to have a reminder on my calendar, you know, to say, hey, make sure that they get these done. Ideally, in your atlas, you'll have for each valve how many turns to seat, and so that when you put it in, so then you come back a year later, and if it takes 23 turns to seat, and I'm only getting 20, that means I got crap in there, and I need to either work it up and down a little bit to clear it out. And that's what a true colleagues up at Atascadero Mutual kind of talked with them as far as how do they keep track of this stuff. And they spent some big dollars to buy a machine that actually counts the turns. It's mounted on a truck. Now they have, you know, 300 or 400 valves.
Is this company you're subcontracting with, FRM?
FRM,
are they doing this kind of stuff for us, or are they just doing the work?
They're just doing the work. They're not.
So we don't have any kind of documentation.
I don't have any documentation that says, you know, what's a full... For the new valves, we're going to start doing this, though. I mean, and it's work, though. It takes time. It takes effort. But I think we really do need to get it in the atlas, because then it doesn't matter. If I get hit by a bus or something else...
Yes, it's all got to be in the atlas, definitely.
And the fields are there. We just need to do it.
And same with the meter reads.
And FRM should keep an atlas on the valves that they test every year and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Because that's right. One day we're not going to be here.
And that's, you know, what we struggle with right now as far as which valves are.
No, I
that's a real good point.
We're on the same page.
Oh, yeah.
I'm disappointed if they're not doing it, to be honest with you, because just going out repairing things, we need to be a little bit more sophisticated.
And it's expensive. I mean, it costs a lot of money to put this stuff in where you really want to know, when did this valve go in? What type of valve is it? Who's the manufacturer? So we will.
Whose responsibility really is this? Is this something the atlas that you should? I mean, do we want to have one person that would be kind of in charge of it? Putting the information in, and then FRM does the work, or would FRM be the one to maintain the atlas, and who would oversee them? I mean, I.
Yeah, well, that's Chris. FRM puts in the valve, and. In the atlas, Brad writes down Smith valve number 2543 installed 11717 exercise blah blah blah. Now,
so then you take the information that FRM. Yeah.
Okay. Now look at it from the point of view of what's been happening. Wallace ran the plant, was the engineer, was the manager. Was the plant operator. So who's responsible for that stuff not being written down?
I don't know.
Well, Wallace, obviously.
And there was no
oversight. He did everything.
And no oversight.
These atlases that Brad got didn't have the information put on the lines.
And there was, the plan was to put them on there, but it just never, you know, got in there. So the concept was sound, but without the data in there, you've got kind of an empty shell. And again, and it goes the same with the sewer side, like our new sewer collection system. And we've been talking, again, I work with FRM and say, okay, when we do something new, let's make sure we write it on the Atlas, and then once a year, we'll take those written notes and update it in the electronic files so that it's not such a big deal to do.
So we have no idea when these valves went in and when they didn't go in. Do we know what sewer lines we've replaced?
Yes. I mean, within the last 5 years.
Yes.
And water lines that we've replaced?
Yeah. I mean, we're...
In the last 5 years.
But it's tricky.
We do have the valve exercise reports.
Mm-hmm.
We do have those, so we know they've been exercised.
I mean, they're doing it per the contract, but they're not counting, again, this next right. level of sophistication.
Some of them
number
so is there a standard way, sorry to interrupt, is there a brainstorm?
Go ahead.
Is there a standard way, for example, when they do the, would you just call that term, testing the valves?
Exercising.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm getting the lingo here. I'm going to add that. Sorry.
It's like helping.
Is there a standard procedure that they need to follow to exercise the valves and then it gets reported? Or is it a by golly, by guess, cowboy approach?
No. There is a standard. And that standard would be you count the number of turns until you're fully seated.
That's not what's happening.
No, I don't have any data on that as far as, I mean, literally the number.
I got a little problem going on.
Yeah, I agree completely.
We're hired a company, paid them, I think, good money.
Minimum $17,000 a month.
And then I find out we don't have any accountability or oversight. It's getting fixed, but I want something more than that. Personally, as a board member. More thorough. You know, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, we have audits on our finances. They would need an audit on operations, I guess. And no pun intended to you, but I'm just saying this. I'm unhappy about hearing that.
I agree.
And I'm actually meeting on Thursday with the FRM on the contract renewal. I'll bring this point to them and say, what was...
We don't know any better. We're late people.
Yeah.
Here, you know?
Well, when that deal was cut, I don't think we were. It just says FRM will do a valve exercise program, and that's what they're doing. So the expectation was maybe not to do a standard. So, but we can establish that. I mean, I think that's the point. We're going to move forward.
Maybe I need to visit some other community service districts and find out.
About their valve exercising program.
Yeah.
What kind of shape are their valves in?
No, an operational audit. Yeah, that's because, you know, we don't micromanage. We set policy. But having an operational audit is setting policy. Because we got to, right, Eric? We got to figure out what we've done.
Yeah. Doesn't the manufacturer of the valve have recommendations on exercising?
Mm-hmm.
So if we could include that in the contract.
In accordance with, yeah.
And Pete, do you know how, for several years, the valves, it has been the plan in the budget to replace valves, correct? Like how many years? Do you remember how many years? I mean, I think it's been at least as long as that. I mean, they keep saying the valves will be changed out this year, or we've budgeted already. I don't know how many years, do you remember? But we've been talking about it since changing the valves since I've been here. And I do know Kathy was pushing for, you know, the valves are wearing out, we need to do something. And so it's time to change them. Yeah.
I remember Kathy's critical spare parts thing, that was a push in the right direction.
Yeah, the critical spare part thing is definitely, we can see the benefits to that.
Where we're keeping track of pumps.
Yes.
This pump, when did it last get changed? At the wastewater treatment plant, what's the maintenance history on this pump? Those kinds of things. I think that critical spare parts is helping us with that. And now we just, you know, expand it out into the water distribution system. There's really not a lot of other pieces or parts out there in the water distribution system, valves and a couple of small booster pumps. So it should be manageable. We just need to set up a system and then feed it, you know, which takes time.
So the Atlas shows all the lines and all the valves, and it's got lines by it to feed in the information.
Yeah, fields that are associated with that particular.
And they should have where the manual is, and then the manual should be organized. So a certain kind of valve goes out, you can find the manufacturer's manual rather than leafing through two boxes of manuals going, let's see.
Is that a Mueller or a Smith & Wesson?
Yeah, exactly.
Have we been allocating $75,000 a year every year for this?
I don't think so.
Well, we haven't been spending it, but we've been allocating it.
It's been carried
out. Well, it's about time.
Okay. Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to get a little momentum in. And again, it's kind of been the push this year with Steve Waldron hitting me in the back of the head saying, let's get going on the CIP. And it takes energy and it takes money. And that's why I bring in MKN and some of these others to help me get these things done. And then as they're going on, then they need to be managed. You got to go see how they're doing or what the problems that they have. And so it's more than just a kind of a line item in the budget. You got to be persistent. It's like any project at home or whatever. You got a contractor there.
And as far as how many years has it been a line item in the budget? I don't recall 10 years ago even getting a budget. We would pass the budget every year, but we didn't have detailed budgets like this.
The CIP program as a separate thing.
Yeah, I don't recall. You know what I mean?
As you indicated, Pete, that 5 years ago when the 208-209 meltdown, we didn't have any extra money to. It was hit and miss, right?
Right.
But now, because we raised our water rates to develop or put together a reserve so that we could start funding these capital improvement projects. I think this is when we start seeing the light.
Well,
I'm new here, but I mean, you know what I'm saying.
Well, in 2000. When the big dig was over, we had no money. As people started, the rebuilding happened, that's when we got all the money. The service connections, all that kind of thing. And then we built up a big surplus. Definitely, it's good you got the atlases, and it's good that you saw a lot of that information was filled out. All we can do is try to fill it out.
Fill it out as we go.
As we go.
And
ask Wallace if he was filling it out on something separate from all that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I haven't talked to him directly about that.
A little bit off the subject, but I think Brad and I talked about some additional help. This would be good for us to establish, maybe kind of get a Cal Poly intern to kind of do some of this kind of extra projects for us to take a look at. So I think for somebody that to be on the agenda, because if we reached out to Cal Poly for an intern, engineering interns, definitely we could have little projects like this that they could help us assist us with.
Well, you know, when we hired Brad, I contacted it's a building and construction major, and right away, people started, you do this all online, started responding, and they're actually, some of them wanted to be interns. Which might not be a bad idea, you know. You don't have to pay an intern CalPERS, do you?
No, you can get a lot of great help for it.
Yeah. But these are people that are majoring in this stuff at Poly, you know. That's a very esteemed major.
Project focused. On
yeah, project. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There could be someone's senior project is water district engineering. You never know. Mm-hmm. But that's a good one to contact.
It's something for us to discuss and practice.
Do you remember that, John? Mm-hmm. And remember, we had a kid that was really interested.
Yeah.
And what was that major? Was that?
We have it resonating.
think construction management. Oh, you have his resume? Yeah, maybe you ought to look at the electronic information. And
so for me, because I've been writing notes on things.
Yeah, I mean, Christy, find their website. They have like what they call a bulletin board, electronic. And go to that and just say.
An internship's a different deal. You work through the department. And it'll be kind of an interview process, and you kind of fit some jobs with someone that has a skill set. You're not necessarily putting on the job bulletin.
Well, right, but you want to.
You want to, and the student would receive intern credits at Cal Poly.
So you want to contact whoever that department chair and say, this is what we would like to do. And just what they say.
I mean, it's great for the student. It looks good on there.
Oh yeah, it's a good. It's a whole good thing.
Every student is asked to do the internship now at Cal Poly.
Yeah, and there's projects.
Cal Poly's pushing. They want students to do the internship. One of the boys who worked for me is doing an internship for an engineering firm next quarter. Yeah. Won't be working for me.
But, all right. Well, I mean, it's the boards. I've been.
Yeah, I'm. What do you guys think?
I'll at least.
Should we do?
I'll get some information.
Try to get the information from the construction management department and tell us what happened at the next meeting.
Okay. Good.
Does everybody?
Because there's also engineering departments, there's many departments, not just construction.
Yeah, well, I was thinking civil as well. Civil, that's where I came out of.
Yeah. But I think if you want to do it through Cal Poly and they get credit or something, there's. Right. In my old business, a slew of lawsuits, people interning for nothing, coming back and suing.
No, I'm not saying nothing.
No, we would pay them.
Internship with the state.
And will they get academic credit?
Yes.
That's because you were in public radio.
Yeah. The reason why I told Pete is we don't put it on the public, we put it on the job bulletin thing. It has to go through a couple different departments.
Right.
And get a group of students who have a. We lay out what the project.
Yeah, we do that at the History Center.
Yeah. And then we go from there. And then we would have some input or Brad with it as far as every quarter have an intern that could work on a specific project. Mm-hmm.
I did my internship 50 years after I graduated.
Yeah. You're still doing it.
And I'm still doing it.
The pay's great, though.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. About a month then.
Okay, so any more questions on the budget?
I think we've kind of covered
the capital improvements. Lynn?
I had one on the recycle water study and upgrade with Water Systems Consulting. They gave us a summary of activities performed for this period.
Mm-hmm.
So I do. Have they done all the way down to task 8? Or is that just a wish?
I think what they've done, and they typically attach this to their invoice, they sort of, and then there's detailed invoice as far as who did what and for how many hours. So I wouldn't say all these tasks are necessarily complete, but we are getting down to... let me just quickly look here. Background water supply characteristics, they're finished with that. Wastewater characteristics, task 4. Task 5, it says begin compiling requirements for various recycled water opportunities. That will be driven if you wanted to put the water on a golf course, you have to meet one level. If you would want to put the water on food crops, it'd be another. So as we identify things. So I would say it's not a linear type thing in terms of when you go to task 3 and then 4. They're working on multiple tasks at the same time. But we are getting down to kind of the crux of the meeting on December 20th was the project alternatives analysis. And again, this was for November, so for December we narrowed those down. There will be a stakeholder involvement type thing. We want to get this thing better framed before we have some sort of a workshop to bring in a, maybe a more public setting to talk about kind of what we're doing and what we're looking at.
I was interested, it said on task 6, recycle water market opportunities, if they had been able to identify any
opportunity specifically as to how much we could be reimbursed once we...
Right, that was the whole purpose of the study.
We were going to sell this. Aren't we going to sell it?
Yeah.
Sell or trade. I mean, and the thinking back now, the state board, who's paying for half of this, what they want us to look at, and it doesn't always have to, we'll still get reimbursed, even if we say there's nothing that makes
no
sense.
No market?
Or there's no market, or there's no, it's not cost effective. Because that's the question I asked about at this meeting. I said, well, will we not get the grant funding if we come up and say, this won't work? And they said, no, they do reimburse you for the work you did to determine whether it will or it won't work.
They pay 50%.
They'll pay 50%, right.
So have they been able to give
come
us
up with someone,
an idea of the recycled water market?
So the market is not only in dollars, but even who's out there.
Right,
so
right.
Golf course. We've identified to say within...
So has anyone talked to the golf course?
Rick has. I mean, because he talks to him anyway.
With San Miguelito.
Yeah, with members of his board. And they are interested. The downside is the water they're using to water the golf course is basically well water, so it's very inexpensive. Probably $100 an acre foot.
Well, how much well water did they have in?
They have enough to manage their needs.
But this isn't potable water.
This is not potable, but it doesn't need to be potable.
No, I know, but the water they're pulling off the wells for the golf course isn't potable water. It's got sulfur intrusion and stuff.
We talked about that as far as whether it is or
because
isn't.
Because we used to use that water until we went with Lopez and State Water.
Okay.
We had wells, but they got sulfur intrusion.
Awesome. Yeah. You could. They were like gray stuff in your water. You really couldn't drink. I mean, you drank it. Yeah. Remember how bad it was?
There was no treatment, huh?
You don't remember? Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, I do remember.
He remembers.
You only drank it if you're hungover from out of town.
I'm just curious as to that, if we have been able to identify a market for this product that we're going to spend.
I'll say conceptually, and it's the obvious ones. There's no, you know, oh, we forgot about this. The barn, the golf course, you know, because the further away you go from where the water's produced, the more expensive it is because you got to put pipe in the ground. And the one angle for the golf course is if Rossi is going to push through his development, he may have requirements in there to use recycled water, or he could be encouraged to use recycled water, which then maybe makes our product more marketable because now he has somebody telling him he must use it.
Hey, I got a great idea. Let's use this water to have a community medical marijuana plantation. Sheriff, that's getting... Yeah, and we could put it, you know...
above the parking lot, on the roof.
Where the Boy Scout camp kind of is, the entrance there, that whole side of that hill. And then there you go. That's starting to pay for everything.
You know, you mentioned a parking...
If you buy from us, you get a parking permit. Port also locked. But I know one director that won't be for it.
You could sell it for us. So this
to the fishermen normally.
Recycled water. We're going to build a pipe to pipe to send this out. I always thought it was going to go in trucks. That's how.
Well, hey,
no,
there are people filling up trucks.
I mean, you could, but.
We would be then building a pipeline to deliver this water.
If we were up the valley, yes.
Which costs $1 million a mile, right?
Very good.
You told her.
No, right. That was the one going from Diablo.
So will that be part of this recycled water market opportunity?
Yes.
So we'll get all that information.
Yes, we'll get some
before
details.
Before we invest in it.
Yes, absolutely. We'll have some numbers of things that we can sort of play with.
Yeah, this is just a study.
See what has to happen in order for it to make sense, or... Here's the roadblocks, and if we can figure out ways around those, and again, it'll give us that information, and it will also give us, I guess, if we do want to move forward, one leg up with the state board as far as other grant funds to pay for the improvements, which is if you do an alternative study with the state has some skin in the game, they're more likely to help fund your infrastructure, your you know, $2 or $3 million projects. So they tell me.
I just wish we could use that water for our plant, you know, to help the plant.
With the BOD?
Yeah.
Rerun it through to lower the BOD? For some reason, you can't do that.
Well, if we could treat it all the way and we just take it straight up to the water tank on the hill.
And then we'd be drinking.
We'll do that.
They do in Las Vegas.
Yeah, well, sure.
Direct potable reuse.
Yeah, sorry.
We're not there yet.
I won't ask any more questions.
And you can put a dye in it to make it look crystal clear.
Yeah.
So there's no little gray things in it. Okay, well.
And just the last thing, we've talked about doing a tour of some sorts. Once the project's clear, the effluent line project and the fixing the stairways and the decking, that should be done by the end of the month. We can maybe schedule a tour in February for board members that are interested in kind of seeing the wastewater treatment plant. It'll be spruced up a bit with some new stuff there. Right now it's a big muddy mess because there's
I can just imagine.
Construction going on. Yeah.
This is exciting.
Yeah.
Well, that was the last item, right?
The last item.
Anybody else have any comments? Ken?
We're still having a meeting on February 14th.
Well, what's February 14th?
Valentine's Day.
Have Green Services
on Valentine's Day?
Second Tuesday of the month.
I won't be here.
Well?
I'm in Rome.
Oh, well. What do you say in Italian? Buongiorno, or whatever else.
Because I have on that date. We didn't change that guy.
Now, I think Valentine's Day is a good time to have a meeting if you're married.
And to make sure we have a
do we have? We don't have any single people on the board. Okay. That's it.
Okay. 14th it is. That's okay.
Well, are you saying can we change the meetings because
no,
you're wrong?
I want to make sure you have a quorum. I want to make sure you meet on February 14th. I want to make sure you have a quorum.
Oh, I'm sure we will.
Maybe.
Isn't that after the 3-day weekend?
What 3-day weekend?
Oh, that's, you know, that big President's Day.
Is that Monday?
Is that in February?
In February. 19th. Oh, it's the 19th?
Which is what?
Yeah.
Well, Martin Luther King?
Another reason
that's
to go to a meeting.
That's January. Okay.
President's Day.
President's, yeah. I didn't look at all of these. Well,
maybe
we know.
There won't be anything on the agenda. It might be.
Oh, you're just wishful thinking.
No,
you're
I'm speaking
practice. Will Aaron be back by then? Out of the country?
Yeah, he'll be back.
That's what it says, the 20th.
The
20th,
so
it's
open.
I'm
sure you can continue on the conversation.
Well, I don't know.
It would be very difficult.
He's considering if he's going to be in trouble.
I'm just trying to get through January.
All right.
You know what I mean? I think we're going to have another big rain in about 2 hours.
We're ready.
Like on Sunday night. I mean, I couldn't believe that. Well, Wednesday, I got 5 inches in Avila.